We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
We start with a cutting from a tourist information website in Australia, read by Kathy Clugston.
Beach snorkeling at Heron Island. Being right on the reef means that you can snorkel off the beach. If you haven't snorkeled before or would like to practice, try Shark Bay.
Our thanks to Lindsay Gaskell in Moorooka, Queensland, for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Really welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Helen Lewis. And opposite them, on my left, Katie Brand and Andy Saltzman. Jeremy, who's been behaving in an uncharitable manner?
OK, let's give the miserable story to the dreary old didactic one. various NGOs have the problem, or perhaps have created or engendered or tolerated the problem of some of their workers in the field misbehaving very, very badly. Now, when you've got an enormous organisation with a reputation it wants to protect, historically, that person has been moved to another parish or to... or to Radio 2. In this case, you can simply move them to another disaster zone. Oh, look, come on, that was Chad. This is Haiti. I mean, come on. What's the likelihood he's going to carry on in the same way? Now, some of these things have been denied, but some people seem to be sort of saying, this is normal behaviour. At the end of the day, in this situation, everyone's under a bit of stress, and they kind of need to kick back. And you think, I know there's going to be an element of adventurism and machismo and the kind of white saviour complex among some of the people, which gives them a sense of entitlement. But I don't think every good act needs to have an equal and opposite reaction. I mean, I don't think we as humans think, oh, God, that's so much philanthropy I've done today. I just need to exploit the vulnerability of a young woman to just kind of balance things out a bit. It just seems a peculiar... But maybe it is human nature. I mean, earlier today, they were collecting for Great Ormond Street to Victoria Station, and the minute I dropped the pound in the bucket, I thought, oh, no, I shouldn't have done that. Now I'm going to have to expose myself to a party of school children. Just to kind of unwind after a spasm of philanthropy and giving. I mean, obviously, we're often stressed out in these situations. Take matters into your own hands, is what I would say. But there is this idea that women sort of do this by choice. People say, well, some women enjoy being prostitutes. Well, some people like being peed on, but I don't think you can make that assumption about them the first time you meet them, really. And there's all this mythology. Oh, there is the happy hooker, the belle du jour, lady of the night, who enjoys it. And you think, well, that is like three people in the world. And those people are used as cover for all of the horrible abuse of all the other women. It's like being the one bondage freak in Guantanamo who finds it all very empowering. That's what I reckon.
I think Jeremy's got it exactly right, which is that you do get this strange attitude that people are conducting essentially penis-based philanthropy by sleeping with sex workers, right? Like, they're doing a wonderful favour to the local economy, which is just not true.
I'll have sex with you, I'll give you money and you can feed your children. You say, well, how about you just give them the money and don't have sex with them? And then they can still feed their children and nobody's an arsehole.
And they've got a bit more spare time as
yes.
well. I guess, you know, we have to look for positives. I'm a sports fan. I therefore know that even in the most dark and disastrous situation, you can find some spurious positives. And Haiti had been really out of the news. And you know, fair play to Oxfam for, you know, making people remember quite what a disaster zone it is. I mean, maybe not the best way they could have gone about that, but let's judge it by the outcome, not the journey.
This is the Oxfam scandal, which has seen the charity rocked by allegations of serious misconduct. It's such a shame that this has undermined all the genuinely helpful Oxfam employees, without whose assistance so many of us would simply have no way to gratify our desire to dress up in the used clothes of old women. As with all other organisations in this sort of mess, Oxfam have pledged to carry out a systematic root and branch review, taking testimony from everyone involved, before briefly sacking Tony Blackburn for reasons no one fully understands. We currently spend 0.7% of our GDP on foreign aid, which seems extraordinary given that we can barely afford these series of bridges that spring into the mind of Boris Johnson whenever he sees an unobstructed horizon. 2 points to Jeremy. Helen, who thinks Valentine's Day is all about leaving?
This must be Boris Johnson, improbably our Foreign Secretary, who used Valentine's Day to give a speech about his roadmap to Brexit. And his roadmap to Brexit basically consists of a big sign that says Brexit will be great, and then nothing else at all. The speech was incredibly boring. I mean, I thought, you know, the worst thing about a Boris Johnson speech was it was going to be packed full of terrible jokes, but he managed to only do one joke about sex tourism. I mean, that's for him, that's, you know, that's a kind of a statesman-like thing to do. But it was in a really extraordinary speech because he tried to get this idea that, you know, everything's going to be brilliant after Brexit because we'll still be able to go on cheapo stag do's to ancient cities, he said. And I just thought, this is it, isn't it? This is, you know, we're talking about trade policy and the only thing we can think about exporting is pissed up lads from Darlington dressed as smurfs. That's it. That's all we've got left now on the global stage. So, yeah, it wasn't my favourite. It was no I Have a Dream. Let's put it that way.
He was sweating, he looked flustered. Something's gone wrong, isn't it? I think maybe he's been found out by himself. He's clearly a very... he's a clever man, and he's finally figured out that he is useless.
Andy. I was rather intrigued by Boris saying that Brexit was not a V sign from the cliffs of Dover, which, incidentally, is my favourite Vera Ling's... Vera Ling's. But also, I think, to be honest, I think that is what we voted for, isn't it? I'm sure there was in some of the campaign literature I got that they would build a giant V sign at the cliffs of Dover that would be about a kilometre and a half high, visible from all points on continental Europe. It could be then used with a large elastic band to fire illegal asylum migrants back wherever they came from. That is what we voted for.
Do you think Valentine's Day, is that a good day for Boris to be making a speech?
I'm surprised that Boris Johnson hadn't got a lot on Valentine's Day. I mean, he must have a lot to keep on top of.
Maybe that's why he was so sweaty.
I don't feel like this is anything even to do with Brexit anymore. I just feel like the country's now locked like the Norse gods in a battle between Jeremy Hunt, George Osborne, Michael Gove and Boris Johnson, who through their whole lives and boyhoods have all individually decided that at some point they're going to be Prime Minister. And they can't all be Prime Minister. So, and they're sort of realising that one of them, the outside chance two of them might become Prime Minister. And now it's just the four of them kind of battling it out. And it's nothing really to do with the country anymore. So we should put the four of them in a room for as long as it takes until one of them wins and they can come out and be Prime Minister for a month and then they can get executed. And then we can just put this whole thing behind us. I mean, I think that sounds eminently reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a shame if this ended in no executions, wouldn't it? Yes.
But, just over a year now until the trapdoor is catapulted on the 29th of March, if all goes according to the current schedule. Admittedly, that is the biggest if since Rudyard Kipling started projecting the titles of his poems onto the night skies above Gotham City. 29th of March. That's a great anniversary. That's the anniversary of the Battle of Towton in 1461, which is the single bloodiest day of fighting in the history of these islands. 28,000 people killed in a single day of hand-to-hand combat. You just have to admire the logistics of that and the work rate of our youngsters back in 1461. I don't think they'd do it. I don't think we'd kill each other in those numbers these days. Our youngsters would take one look at that battlefield and say, no, I'm not doing that. And we'd have to hire in a load of Poles to kill each other. Just to get...
But it's because of the health and safety madness of the EU that we haven't been able to have those battles.
This is Boris Johnson's big Brexit speech, his Valentine's Day gift to the nation. Johnson tried to assure the public that Brexit can be grounds for hope rather than fear. You know, as in that popular phrase, a tremendous hope of the unknown. This is supposed to be one of a number of speeches by members of the Cabinet on Brexit to arrive in the coming days, so plenty to look forward to. I can't wait to see what Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, David Lidington, comes out with. There won't be a dry seat in the House. The Foreign Secretary delivered very much a greatest hit speech, a few off-colour gags, a dash of Latin, and some unnecessarily long words. All he needed to do to complete the set was zip line off the stage and into somebody else's wife. Boris argued, we as a nation should unite around the things we all believe in. If the last few years have taught us anything, there is absolutely nothing that we all believe in. Other than it was a bit sad when the lady on the ice skates fell over. Boris did say that Brexit does not involve giving a V sign from the White Cliffs of Dover, although he hasn't ruled out mooning from the window of a speeding Eurostar. 2 points to Helen. Katie, which party is looking after the political animals?
Well, this is an announcement from Labour, from the Labour Party, about a new set of animal welfare policies that they would like to introduce, were they to be in government. And they're really playing to their industrial heartlands by banning foie gras. just wooing back all those voters. I don't, maybe Jeremy Corbyn spent slightly too long in Islington now, perhaps, if that's his main priority. But he's banning foie gras and badger culling and a whole load of other things, which sound very nice, which is very good. I mean, you can't argue with animal welfare. You can't actually, as I'm finding, be especially funny about animal welfare. You just have to say it's a really, really good idea and then shut up, because otherwise Twitter is not a nice place to be for a bit. They've suggested that, like, for example, it's difficult for generation rent, as the millennials are called, shut out of the housing market, so they have to rent, but then they can't have pets because it's very difficult to have a pet in a rented house. The landlord won't allow it, so you'll be allowed to have pets, which is lovely. It's like, you know, you can't buy a house, but here's this puppy. That's very nice. But the trouble is that the elephant in the room, the well-cared-for elephant in the room, is that we still don't know what Labour's position on Brexit is. And that sort of people suspect that maybe they're more in favour of Brexit than a large number of their voters and members would like. So it sort of feels a bit sleight of hand, this. It feels slightly dishonest that they're sort of doing something nice to mask the sort of horror that's to come. A little bit like, you know, when your boyfriend has sex with you one last time before they dump you. Do you know what I mean?
That's my second favourite of Vera Lynch. Yeah.
We'll meet again.
You'll never get animal welfare past rural voters because people in the countryside, that's animal cruelty is what they live for. They just make things up and say that they're sport. Is, oh, well, rambler dissolving has been something that rural people have engaged in for many years. And the ramblers enjoy it and the acid works in seconds and it's more humane than beating them to death with pool cues.
The badger cull, I mean, it'd be disappointing to lose the traditional British sport of badger culling. But, I mean, it's a lot of it, as so often in politics, is sort of vengeance-driven. It's a blood feud between humans and badgers in this country. It goes back to when the badgers crucified Queen Boadicea, of course. So. I do worry, though, that having a, you know, attempted this badger cull, it's just going to be a generation of radicalised badgers now with a kind of vengeance against us.
Well, the nice thing about it is it marks, I think, a new era of Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, because this is just a complete, utter cynicism from him, right? I'm not saying that he hates badgers. I wouldn't go that far. But I don't think he has evinced a huge love of badgers in his career so far. But they know at the last election that some of the stuff that really hurt the Tories was the ivory ban that was in the manifesto and also fox hunting. So in the run-up to the local elections, it's basically hug a badger, hug a lobster, hug a big can of foie gras.
Get the badger-owning renter vote, all of these things.
And are we looking at votes for badgers? Is that where this is heading?
Well, that's what it says.
Where will it end?
I think they'll bring it all together and they'll offer millennials council houses with pet badgers.
This is how policies are formed.
This is the news that the Labour Party have drawn up a new policy platform on animal welfare, committing them to improving provisions for pet owners, creating new systems to prevent cruelty, and joining the Conservatives in recognising animal sentience. And in a world of rampant economic uncertainty, where the housing crisis is biting harder than ever before, it's a relief to find our two major parties standing as one in the belief that chickens have feelings. The proposals apply to most animals other than cats, who are described in the document as neoliberal Blairite scum who are only in it for themselves. Labour will guarantee affordable vet care for those on low income, suggesting that in years to come, the only way most of us will be able to get our tonsils out is by dressing up as a bull mastiff. 2 points to Katie. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Helen have 4, and so too to Katie and Andy. We start round two with an extract from the New York Times.
An airport in London was shut down on Sunday night when an unexploded bomb was discovered during construction work. Navy bomb disposal experts were expected to detonate the device on Tuesday in a controlled explosion at the bottom of the Thames, one of the least populated areas of the capital.
Our thanks to Dr. John Orr, Charles Nguyen and Fred King in Maryland for sending us that. Andy, who couldn't persuade others to share?
Any parent? Well, this would be the Northern Ireland continuing its heroic efforts to not have a functioning government, which I think is a blueprint for the future of humanity, essentially. They've had 400 days now with no government after the collapse of the latest power-sharing talks. I was there the other day in Belfast, and it seemed to be working fine. And it leads me to believe maybe... I mean, do we need a government? I mean, government seemed to really... really pissed people off. And Belgium had a go for... They had over a year with no government, and France have elected basically a 3D printout of a void. this seems to be the way that politics is going. So I think in some ways this is a laboratory experiment, and it will be rolled out across the country, and we will just have like an empty... There'll just be a bucket in Westminster... And nothing will happen, and everyone will be happy. This is the utopia that we're entering.
Is there anything in the bucket, Chris?
No.
It's a symbol.
Don't spoil the bucket, Mike.
There's almost no end to the ridiculousness of it. So the current situation is that you have a First Minister and Deputy First Minister from two different parties. So the idea has always been DP and Sinn Féin. But if we take it back into Britain, it becomes Karen Bradley is both of them. She's both First Minister and Deputy First Minister. She has to power share with herself.
DUP, yes, the DUP seem incredibly sanguine about the return of direct rule, I suppose, because Northern Ireland will be ruled, like the rest of the United Kingdom, by the DUP. Which puts them very much in the driving seat. But it's all to do with the Ash for Cash thing, and also gay marriage, which they will not break because of the sodomy and an affront to God and nature. But also there is this sticking point of language, because the native language, the historic language of Ireland, surprisingly, is called Irish. But the DUP... They said, no, we have our own language. If the Catholics have their language of Irish, we have our language of Ulster Scots. Now, Ulster Scots or Ullins is a bit hard to explain. You know the language English? It's exactly the same as that. Except it's spoken in a Ballymena accent. That's all that happens. But because of the peace agreement, all public sector jobs are advertised in the three languages, and this is entirely true. Some friends of mine who live in Rostrevor in County Down, they sent me a jobs advert from the local paper, and the job was for a teacher for children with special needs. And it said that in English, it said in Irish, and in Ulster Scots it said, "Teacher wanted for wee dafties."
This is the collapse of the Northern Irish power-sharing negotiations, which could mean direct rule from Westminster, although that might not be such a bad outcome for the DUP, given that they're currently able to bring down the entire British government if someone so much as asked them to march more quietly. You have to wonder what Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness might make of this from the afterlife, but to be honest, they're probably still getting over the shock of finding each other in the same place. Theresa May visited Northern Ireland this week alongside Irish Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. In order to make the trip, Varadkar had to cancel a previous engagement with Welsh First Minister Carwyn Jones, who once again spent Pancake Day alone, scooping Nutella out of the jar with his sad, lonely fingers. 2 points to Andy. Helen, which heir might, after all, be going spare?
This must be the story about the Commonwealth, of which Her Majesty the Queen is currently the head. But I had no idea that when she dies, unfortunately, it doesn't automatically go to Prince Charles, which is kind of mind-blowing. I thought the whole point of hereditary monarchy was that no matter how few chromosomes they'd got, or whether or not they last had a chin back in the 1500s, you kind of got whichever one was, you know, there when the music stopped. But... But apparently not. No, there's going to be some kind of special election to work out. So it could be. I mean, the trouble with politics at the moment is my friend has an idea of the politics, which says we're living by the banter heuristic, right? Which is whatever is the most banter thing to happen is the thing that inevitably ends up happening. So by this, I do not know who is the next head of the Commonwealth. It could be you. I mean, I don't know how you feel about
Should
it.
Should point out that Helen is looking at me at this point.
Can it literally be anyone? It doesn't even have to be a member of the royal family. Could I smell a new reality show?
This is all predicated on the Queen dying. She's not going to die, is she?
No way.
The thing that keeps her going, she looks at her son every day and thinks, no.
We keep singing her theme tune as well. It becomes scientifically impossible for her to die.
There's a lot of talk about humans becoming part robot and android in the future, but what if the Queen is at the cutting edge of that and has had a kind of robotics lab in Buckingham Palace for the last 50 years, and she is an android?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I'm straying into David Icke territory.
No.
A robot monarch is an achievable goal. I mean, that's... Because the range of skills it has to perfect.
Mm-hmm. What is, so they've got to...
Open a supermarket, wave.
So what's keeping you busy these days?
Yep. Yeah,
and not sing Deutschland über alles in public. It's quite easy to programme.
It's not difficult code, is it?
Is the more pressing question not whether or not there will be a Commonwealth? Because post-Brexit, surely... it will be an empire again. Is this not what we voted for? Empire Mark II?
That's the worst thing, is that one of the things that Brexit say all the time is, you know, can you name your MEP? Can you name every country in the Commonwealth? I mean, no one can. I mean, I'd hazard a guess at India.
Australia, maybe?
Canada.
Right,
and then...
That must be most of them, mustn't it?
There's like another 45.
We don't know stuff anymore. We all used to know. Remember
come
we
on,
all,
Brandon,
no, they used to be. We used to all know, like, what leaves go with what trees. I mean, not that you try and put them back on, but do you know that? My late father would be appalled by my inability to identify British bird life by its plumage. I was walking on a beach in Orkney. Earlier this year, and there was this big, weird duck in the sea. And it was a dog walker. I assume she was a dog walker. She had a small bag of shit. strangely, no dog. But anyway, I didn't ask. It wasn't my business. I assure you, it wasn't. It wasn't my business. Anyway, I said, excuse me, do you know the name of that? She said, that's an eider. And, you know, I just had never put it together that an eider was a kind of bird and that the eider down that we used to sleep under was stuffed... And apparently a duvet is a kind of grebe. I didn't know the difference between a cormorant and a shag, because you can get into a lot of trouble if you get that one.
This is a secret meeting of a high-level group within the Commonwealth of Nations who are thought to be deciding whether Prince Charles will automatically succeed his mother as the Commonwealth's head. If the inevitable happens before a suitable successor has been found, the position will be temporarily filled by the most regal-looking corgi. Monty, for my money, but I know we all have favourites. Of course, everybody's got their own favourite head of the Commonwealth, but for me, it will always be Sylvester McCoy. 2 points to Helen. Katie, who's selling off A Guide to Getting Off?
This was a favourite story of mine of this week, which was the discovery of a Georgian sex manual. Yes. Jane Austen suddenly takes on a whole new light once you've seen this. It's come up for auction, I think. It's called Aristotle's Masterpiece. I don't think Aristotle had anything to do with it, but it was around in the 1700s, but was banned. Possibly banned until quite recently, although there wasn't a copy of it, so no one really knew or cared. But it is brilliant. It's this amazing manual about sex and lots of tips and advice. And the reason I think it was banned is it was just full of these kind of lusty images and pictures of wood carvings and descriptions of women lying with beasts. good advice as well for having children. It said that the woman should try to imagine the face of the child that she wanted whilst having sex with her husband in order to conceive, and that if you imagine bad things, then that's what your child would look like.
Miles, I think it's right that your kids look eerily like Mike Atherton's cover drive.
off the back foot, that's right. Yeah. The pitched up outswinger.
And there's lots of kind of quite practical advice. Apparently you should, before you do anything, you should invigorate your mutual desires and get your flames to burn, because this will end up in much more mutual enjoyment. Whereas, you know, now it's like, you know, you share a bottle of red wine, have a quick fiddle, fall asleep, and wake up wondering if you dreamt it. You know, I think there's a lot to be learned from this. I'm glad it's back in the public domain.
Is it only what the woman is thinking of imagining during the act?
Yeah, you have to imagine. It says you have to imagine your husband's face sort of slightly implies that you're not with your husband when you're conceiving the child. But you have to imagine your husband's face very clearly so that the child will look like your husband.
That's what I got from it. It sounded a bit like a Dear Deirdre in waiting, right? Which is, oh, I accidentally imagined the postman's face, and that's why your son looks so different. It had that slight air about it.
That was the scientific reason, they said, why you shouldn't have lie with animals was because the last thing you see is what you give birth to. And they had a picture, didn't they, of this child born in Italy with wings and a single bird foot. And it wasn't a photograph, obviously, it was a drawing.
I think the lesson is, don't try and do it with a KFC bucket for one.
That is my third favourite Vera Lynn.
This is a book called Aristotle's Masterpiece, a previously banned Georgian sex manual that is now up for sale. The sex manual was recently handed into an auction house by a lovely old lady who looked absolutely knackered. The manual advises that you shouldn't mate with animals, but I think we've had enough of experts, haven't we? One piece of advice is try a bit of role play. Imagine one of you has the plague and the other has to dig a grave. Women are encouraged to lie on their left side if they want a girl, lie on their right side if they want a boy, and lie about having syphilis if they just want to be left alone. 2 points to Katie. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share? Jeremy.
Miles, this is actually a notice on the wall of the lavatory backstage, which I will put back after the show. And it says, the use of nicotine vaporising devices is prohibited in these premises as it might activate the fire alarm, causing an evacuation.
Helen.
This is from The Eye on Tuesday, and it was sent in by Elizabeth Gatland of Perth. A local politician has said that wild boars should be given contraceptive pills to control Belgium's population.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Helen have 9, but this week's winners are Katie and Andy with 10. Before we leave you, here is something spotted on South Western Railway's Twitter feed by Peter Denton in Teddington.
Between Monday the 12th and Friday the 16th of February, we will be improving our smart card systems. This means you will not be able to purchase any smart card products on our station ticket machines.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Helen Lewis, Katie Brand and Andy Zaltzman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Kathy Knudston. The chair script was written by James Keppel, Robin Morgan and Sarah Morgan, with additional material by Sophie Duker and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.